Welcome to the inaugural show zero of the Babylon podcast. My name is Summer Brooks.
I'm going to put that on and go into the spot factory and get to work.
My dog and I are being attacked by a duck.
I think I'm kidding, but I'm not.
When you're hungry, you're hungry.
The virgin sits on a crate opening and closing his pipe.
Steph has a mind of its own tonight.
I didn't get any entries at all.
Telepaths against mundanes is no contest.
I like Day of the Dead.
I did too.
Hey guys, it's Gary. I'm listening to episode 1.
And God help us all, this is Joe Truman.
Production of the malt liquor beverage Zima.
Nice and close, and I looked at him and I go, you are.
Hey there. Okay, actually, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
Stella, I knew it was a bad idea to record. I knew it was.
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And that's it.
Yep. No, oh, Brett. No. He's not well.
Yep. Brett's feeling under the weather. And
since he's not at all a well cat, we thought we were going to be away for a fortnight. We thought we'd go ahead and bury him.
Okay.
Oh, Monty Python. Anyways, I didn't do my good perfect Pepper Pot, so I apologize.
Nope. Nope.
Look, well, we don't have a whole lot to talk about. I think it's sort of those end of the year doldrums, but we do want to encourage everyone to go out to the petition we talked about last week and sign your name to that thing.
Yes, we need. I don't know what else can we. What else can we do to drum up more Babylon 5 content?
Kidnap Joe Straczynski and put him in a box. Oh, I know. We could like tie him to the bed and then break his ankles.
Oh,
like in Misery and make him right.
That never turns out well. Ever.
Can I be Kathy Bates?
If you want to.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And somewhere off in the distance. A screenwriter is calling his lawyer to have him draw up.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, restraining orders. What a bitch.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, we do not resort to violence. Begging, pleading, bribery, denial, bargaining. What's
yeah, the steps of grieving.
Yeah, what's the seven stages? Was it seven stages of grief or five?
I can't remember. I think the last one is making a podcast, though.
Yeah. So we now have a new stage. You know, when you don't get to acceptance, except you skip right over acceptance and go to making a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
What would happen if we did that for every show we thought was unjustly canceled?
Oh, Lord. Mike would never get any sleep.
Oh, my word.
You think I get sleep now? have you not been paying attention?
Yeah, I figure at Christmas time some might show up in your stocking. Here's a gift card for 10 minutes of sleep.
I'm sorry. I used that up. That's just going to, that'll just basically put a dent in the deficit.
A sleep card.
Yeah, a sleep card. That's it.
That's funny.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, I don't know. I actually happened to pull out the last volume of the Psycor trilogy just cause, and read about 10 pages out of it. And it's like, oh, this is too good to not be in print. Anyway.
Yeah. I've actually tweeted at Delray Spectre trying to get their attention, and they've been ignoring me. So I may have to, you know, flex my producer muscles and actually like send out a few emails saying, "Hi, you know me from Dragon Page. I'm here to instigate."
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can get an interview on. We have here the editor of Delray Books. How come you're not publishing the B5 novels anymore? Could browbeat them. That would be great.
No, I wouldn't want to browbeat them. I'd have to go the subtly persuasive route.
How does one browbeat anyways?
I don't know, but I think it involves a headlock.
Well, that explains why mine never worked then.
It requires a shillelagh. That's the optimal part of the piece that you're missing there, you know.
Oh, so you cannot hold somebody in a headlock and hold a shillelagh. The thing's just too darn big.
Well, it depends. You can get a small shillelagh. How big is your shillelagh?
Do you want a small shillelagh? They say size doesn't matter.
Well, true. But, I mean, if you're going with tiny, you know, you're talking a blackjack here.
Well, shillelagh Viagra? Is that what we're needing here? I'm not sure where we're going with this.
No, I don't know. Wait, the rails we jumped too much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we're licking the third rail right now, I think.
Don't lick the third rail. It never turns out well.
Yeah, no, not at all. Hey, well, since we've already gone off the rails, why don't we take a break and we'll come back and do some deep geeking? What do you say?
Wow. That's novel.
You need 10 minutes to use your sleep card.
That means I have to push a button or something, right? Yes. Oh, and yeah, I got to do that. There we go. Okay.
Yep.
We're set.
The Functional Nerds Podcast from author-blogger Patrick Hester and musician-blogger John Anelio. Each week, we chat with interesting folks about the things we love, like music, science fiction and fantasy books, movies, and TV shows, even the occasional comic book. Past guests have included Blake Charlton, Lou Anders, Mighty Mer Lafferty, Kirby Crackle, Mike Resnick, James Aang, Peter V. Brett, Kay Kenyon, Neil Clark, Carolyn Crane, and Chris Roberson. New episodes are available every Tuesday on FunctionalNerds.com, or you can subscribe via iTunes by searching for Functional Nerds. That's the Functional Nerds Podcast with Patrick Hester and John Anelio. Yep, he's the guy who sang that George R.R. Martin is not your bitch song.
And keeping on Crusade continues.
Yes. Tonight we are deep geeking on The Long Road, episode number whatever, because we've shuffled the deck.
Well, on the DVD, it's the second
episode. Yes.
So it was second in order of the original order. And what it, fourth in this one?
Yeah, and obviously produced much later in the run, because we get the uniform change. Summer, would you like to do the honors and give us our quick synopsis of our episode tonight?
Our quick synopsis. The crew of the Excalibur receives a distress call, or a cry for help from the Medusa, saying that they're having trouble with the locals on a planet. They're mining for a rare mineral that seems to have antiviral effects, and they think it'll be a great help back home. The problem is with local terrorists who seem to have a pet dragon. And the announcement that there's the presence of a gold dragon on the planet invokes some amusement in Dear Galen. And as we find out, it's belongs to a friend of his, another technomage named Alwyn. And shenanigans ensue, violence, bargaining, denial, anger.
Podcasts.
Podcasts. Eventually, things work out, and technomages move on down the long road.
Yeah, so so what was your well, let me say this first of all, coming back to it again, I liked it better than I did the first time.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if that's because of the running order, because the dragon was silly. Okay, at no point in time in the episode did I ever buy that Earth Force's finest or even Earth Force's mid to lower level would have been suckered by that thing. I don't care what Alwyn says about it being a primal fear. I think that somebody would have been smart enough to go, you know what? Hey, let's put a scanner on that thing. I'm not getting any life readings.
I think if the dragon had, if it had just been the dragon and that other things weren't happening, they might have been able to subsume their suspicions. But the fact that, you know, the dragon, there was some minor damage, there's that little, well, what is it?
Captain the Medusa wasn't, obviously, he wasn't particularly taken in by it, and the lieutenant who led the first squad down, you know, even though he was kind of nonplussed by it, he did say, look, it's a hologram, let's keep going, and sure enough, it's displayed as such, and there's not a problem. But I think the thing is that when you see that episode second, you don't get a sense of the characters.
Right.
But here we are in our order, four episodes in, and we do have a sense of who these characters are. And so now we get to see them kind of a little more out of their element, mm-hmm. and how they respond to that. And I like that.
Yeah. Even, I mean, you have a little slightly better feel for the relationship between Gideon and Galen.
Yes.
But because of the opening scene, you get a little bit better feel for the relationship between Gideon and Matheson.
Yes.
I mean, just the nonplussed way he sort of handles his captain's outbursts at missing the shots.
I love that. There's Gideon. He's kind of being sort of, you know, he's still trying to be all business and everything with, tell me what's going on, Lieutenant, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, man, did you see that? <It's> like,
and the look on Matheson's face when he goes, and this is supposed to be relaxing, and he goes,
yeah,
complaining is part of the game, all right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
I had a better appreciation for it in this order. Because you see they're trying to be businesslike, and then it just turns, you know, it turns into two guys arguing about basketball.
Yeah. And I like, you know, and Matheson is so buttoned down. It sounds weird to say that I love that character, but I do, because he is so low key. He's always professional, and I, you know, even when he's giving his captain a ribbing, there's still that level of respect and professionalism in how he does it. And I just, you know, I think that's a tribute to Daniel Day Kim's portrayal.
Mm-hmm. I like to think that there's a parallel between how he keeps himself pulled in to him keeping his telepathic gift pulled in.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, good call on that. That could be very much,
you know, they are responsible for policing themselves now. So he's holding his talents back unless there's an overwhelming need that his captain needs it, his crew needs it, or something. Right. And that's just the way he is. There's a reserved manner to him that it seems like there's a parallel between how he's holding himself in versus holding his talent in.
Right. You're right. A certain amount of self repression, if you will. I liked better this time around the interplay between Alwyn and Galen. Edward Woodward was just marvelous chewing up the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that was definitely the bluster of the local wizard. You know, he really, I mean, he is in essence playing to the groundlings in the pit in a very real way.
Uh-huh.
But it works. And I don't know. I mean, I found myself smiling quite a bit watching this episode. You know, there's some really nice, just the character interplay. The plot itself, I don't know, it just kind of resolves itself too tidily. There's this, God, for lack of a better analogy, there's this sort of kung fu kind of thing. You know, they wander in the western town. You know, the locals are having problems with the railroad guys coming in or the wrestlers or whatever. And, you know, a lot of posturing and the potential for violence. And then they pull a trick and then they wander away. You know, so from that nature, you know, I guess I don't know whether it's because I really enjoyed Babylon 5 with the fact that the episodes were so layered. One built on the next, which built on the next, and these are very much episodic. You know, so the plots themselves just don't seem to lend a whole lot, or don't seem to have a lot of impact for me at this point.
And I saw it a little bit differently. Literally, this seemed to have a Shakespearean comedy feel about it. It's especially if you look at the scenes that just have Alwyn and Galen.
Yeah.
It feels like a stage play.
Yes, I agree. Well, if you really look at it, I mean, it really, in a lot of ways, just boils down to three guys. And it's Gideon, Alwyn, and Galen. You know, all the other players are peripheral, even though they have some importance. They don't really come to life as characters. You know, the tavern keeper is real two-dimensional. The captain of the Medusa is really two-dimensional.
The captain of the Medusa was completely unfathomably unbelievable. At no point in time did I ever think he was worthy of captaining an Earth Force destroyer.
Yeah, that part of it didn't bother me. I mean, I'm not
enough
of a military guy to know.
That bothered me a lot when you compare the presence and the mental acuity of a lot of the captains we saw during the fight for Earth. During the battles when we had, you know, Earth Alliance ships fighting Earth Alliance ships, even the ones who were blatantly in the wrong, they were a little bit sharper. I mean, this guy was not sharp at all. Just not at all.
No, I agree, but I think that's one of the problems of the script, that he's not a character and he's more of he's a stereotype. You know, he's the blustery captain who doesn't understand. And his lieutenant is the guy who's risen through the ranks, or he got his commission by going to ROTC. Because you notice, I mean, it was that kind of cliched scene when the captain sends him off on his mission and he says, "All right, son, you go take care of it." And I said, "Well, but gee, captain, don't you think you should go do it?" "No, that's how you get medals and get promoted. Combat. Good hunting." Okay. You know, I mean, it's you had to have the scene. I get that. It just, I hate to say it because you don't really want to think of Straczynski as this kind of guy, but it was lazy writing.
Given what we've read of the environment he was working with at the time,
you're inclined to give him a pass?
I'm not a pass, but more of a, I understand, but really? Just really? Because I don't think this is the worst of the Crusade episodes.
No, it's certainly not. You look at how he handles Alwyn, and you look at how he handles Galen, and how he handles Gideon. in that, and especially Alwyn and Galen. I think the scenes between the two of those, I mean, obviously the actors are phenomenal actors, you know, and of course it's nice to see father and son do their thing. I mean, there was kind of that element in the characters, but they really, you know, when Alwyn says these are decent people, you know, they're rash and they're not always the smartest, but they're decent people, you really believe it. This really sounds like a guy who, you know, as much as anything, just from what he says, he sounds like someone who has been wandering and looking for something in his own existence, and he's found it. He's found a purpose, and it's not an arrogance for him to say, you know, I'm their wizard, and I'm their part-time soldier, and I'm their part-time nursemaid, and all that. He doesn't come to it from a position of power. He comes to it from a position of not only compassion, but a certain amount of humility and a humble thing. And the way that Edward Woodward delivers that and how he brings Alwyn to life speaks to the fact that Straczynski had a handle on this character and wrote great dialogue to help the actor bring that all to life. And it's just, it even highlights even more, again, how cliched the Earth Force guys were.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear you. I mean, there's, to a certain extent, you know, I mean, okay, maybe lazy writing's too harsh, but exhausted writing? I don't know. You know, or certainly...
I'll chalk it up to exhausted.
Well, I mean, you know, and that's fine. I mean, I think, you know, and it could be that part of the thing was, you know, he knew what he wanted to do with these characters and what he wanted to say and just didn't think that the other or didn't have the perspective to say, okay, I really need to bring these guys along. Because it really wouldn't have been hard, I don't know, to I know that the hook, part of the dilemma was the overarching, there's 40 billion people back at home who are going to die, and we got to do this. We just don't have time to muck around with the locals. But, you know, there wasn't that sense of urgency, or even Gideon was the guy who understood all the sides and was trying to find a solution that was satisfactory to everybody and coming up with nothing. If you'd even seen a little bit of a hint of compassion in Marshall Teague's character, then he would have, I don't know, come to life a little bit more.
I have to interject this from the chat room. Comparing this episode to Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh? I'm not sure I draw the parallel.
Alwyn is Egg Shen, Galen is Wang, and Gideon is Burton.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see that. He's running around trying to do stuff, but every time the action comes, he's sort of clonked on the head.
The whole situation they're chasing, it doesn't matter. It's a MacGuffin. The real story is how these people refuse to deal with an outside influence wanting their resources because they were under the protection of a technomage. I mean, the whole entire episode keyed on that one phrase, as long as you're here, we have nothing to worry about.
Right, right. Yeah. And I like that bit where, you know, at the end, Alwyn says, as soon as I heard him say that, so it was time for me to go. You know, I get that. It's just, I mean, I guess that's the thing. It's almost like there's two different things happening in this episode. It's the supposed plot, which is really pedestrian. And then there's the really cool technomage stuff. And as much as I've said in the past that I've tepid at best toward the technomages and the bit with the flying demons, that was clever, but whatever, it didn't do much for me. The stuff that I liked was things like, you know, when Gideon says to Alwyn, you know, they're calling you a terrorist, and he's like, that's funny because I'm more of an annoyance and I recognize that. And so my power is great. But then when he tells Galen, you know what I can do. You believe it because there's steel in his voice. It's just that we never really saw that. We saw giant dragons and we saw goofy demons flying around. You know, and when Galen and Alwyn are standing there, they're kind of treating it as a joke.
Mm. The teeth are a nice touch.
You think so?
Not too big. What's great is you hear the chomping in the background.
Yes, that was...
You hear the crunching.
And that was amusing.
I never noticed how accurate... that chomping sounded.
Yeah, yeah.
Until this time. Like, oh, ouch. What did they do? Record a tiger biting into a elephant bone or something? I mean, that was a crunch.
Yeah.
That was teeth hitting bone there. But yeah, it you know what this episode really felt like?
It felt like
it was setting up an arc of some other sort. That it was a starting point of a tangent storyline we were going to eventually get a payoff on. But
right. And it was very possible that we could have seen Alwyn again at some point down the road. I get that. And I guess, you know, at the time when Crusade first aired, that was sort of my approach to the whole thing. I can't say that there was ever one episode in that, well, this entire run that absolutely blew me away. But I was willing to give it a chance because that's how I felt about the first season of Babylon 5 with, you know, a couple exceptions. There wasn't any one episode that knocked me out, but it was enough for me to stay on. Then, of course, the payoff came, you know, in the next 4 years. And it's just unfortunate that, oh God, this is going to be just a recurring refrain, isn't it? It's unfortunate that we never got to see that, that all we get are these, I hate to say story fragments, but that's just kind of how it feels like.
Yeah. No, I don't know if we would have seen Alwyn again, but I would have to think that just because of how many hints they dropped about the Technomages being gone, they haven't come back yet. Hell, even about Elric moving.
Yeah, on. I like that little bit. That was a nice touch, and that was a kind of poignant. You know, I liked when they were talking about that stuff and, you know, how is Elric? Well, he's passed on. And I never agreed with anything, but, you know, he's a good man. And, you know, and Galen's like, I was afraid of him the whole time. You know, and I can see that. I was good with that. There was a nice depth in Alwyn. That was one of those things and was a nice contrast to Galen, who seems so tightly wound. For the most part,
he seems.
I just wish it.
You?
Yeah, he does.
Really?
He does in a lot of ways. Yeah, and I know in the Technomage trilogy, by this point, he's let go of a lot of his anger and whatnot. But yeah, there's still something. There's still a tight spring in him somewhere.
Hmm. Okay.
That's part. I mean, I know part of it is like at the beginning of the episode, you know, when they have the briefing on the Medusa, and you know, he clearly knows what's going on, and the fact is that he's enjoying the fact that he knows and nobody else knows, and he's almost flaunting the fact that he knows and they don't know, and there's nothing they can do about it.
The grin he gets on his face when when Gideon is telling him about the problem on the planet, he goes, a dragon?
Yeah. Yeah. What color was it?
What color is the dragon? And he just gets this angelic bemusement on his face going, I know something you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. And then you see the little ship at the end take off with the little gold dragons on the wing.
Yeah.
It's a nice
That was a nice little touch. Yeah, I like. I one of the things that I really like in with Gary Cole's portrayal of Gideon is he's clearly the man in charge of the ship, but there is something about him that allows him to follow Galen. You know, he gets annoyed, but it's never as Galen says, he doesn't trust easily and often. There's something there between them, but he trusts Galen enough to allow him those. Okay, you know something I don't know. You gonna tell me? Well, if I'm right, we'll find out soon. Well, what if you're not right? Well, that's hardly likely. You know, anybody else probably would have punched Galen in the nose at that point.
I like to think that he's earned some level of trust for saving his life and for helping him out previously.
Sure.
Because I would think the thinking goes, you know, well, he saved my life. He's not going to let me die here.
Right. Maybe. Yes.
You know,
yes.
You'd hope that. And what was it he said in the one episode? You know, it's like rescuing a cat. I feel a little, I have an obligation to this stray cat I rescued once.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
There's a couple other neat points I liked where things were kind of the convention, as much as I've railed about the cliche of the captain and the lieutenant, a couple of the conventions that were overturned, the visitors in from out of town don't know their ways. And, you know, and the innkeeper says, well, what do you have? And when Gideon throws the coin on the thing, it's like, well, what did this buy? He's like, the inn, all of it. It's like, you know, usually in those kinds of things, the guy puts the local currency on, the guy sifts through and goes, okay, you know, this will buy you whatever. And it's like, I just love the fact that it was so over the top and it was so clear that they're not from that place. I mean, not even, they sussed it out. You know, the locals show up and say, you need to get out of here. You know, we know you're not who you say you are. They don't necessarily come out and say that they're, you know, off-worlders, but that's sort of the tone of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I like that. I like that part of it was well handled. And the little bit of silliness, like, well, how long are we going to stay here till something happens? Well, how long you know something will happen? And then the door kicks open.
Did that now, seem like an Abbott and Costello routine to you?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So, I don't know. I haven't, like I said, mixed feelings about this episode. I feel better about it this time around than I did the first time around. Even still, a little bit silly, yeah. But
I honestly do wish the dragon had been a little better.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's, I mean, the CG wasn't that great on it. We've
had better CG dragons before that. Because how old is Dragonheart?
Dragonheart, I don't remember. You're going to make me pull up my...
That was 80s, right?
But I don't think that was CG, was it? I thought that was stop motion.
I'm not sure. I thought it was a combination. I mean, if that was stop motion, that was some damn fine stop motion.
Oh, I mean, you know. Think of the Tauntaun in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm. That was a puppet. Or a mutant Muppet, I'm not sure.
No, a mutant Muppet was me. Oh, Dragonheart was 96. What am I thinking of? Okay, I was thinking of something older.
I know what one you're talking about, because I used to have the book. Yeah, but no, Dragonheart with Dennis Quaid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Voice of the Dragon was Sean
Connery.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had.
That's CG. That could be CG'd at that part, or at least incorporating some of that. Yeah. Anyway.
It didn't have to be as detailed as that dragon was, but literally the first time you see the full dragon, when the soldiers are looking at it.
Yeah.
It looks like a gummy bear.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. It looks soft and cuddly. It doesn't look horrific.
It looks like a giant gummy bear.
Yeah.
Except for the breathing fire part. So, yes, I would have liked a little more badass in my dragon, please.
Right. Exactly.
Other than that, I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. I mean,
I do like how I'm not sure Alwyn, when he said you're going to have to live with the consequences of what I have to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious from that point on that he's doing that just to have them destroy the mine in such a way that the villagers are not punished.
Right.
For instigating that.
Yeah, but you know, that's the other thing. I don't think Gideon sold that as well as he could have. I don't know. There was just something how he... That's one of those things in the episode where it's just too pat.
I thought that was... Because one, his not selling it as hard as you'd normally think about it, it made it very blatant that he was in on the gag. I mean, yes. This was a big sleight of hand going, okay, well, we can do this.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and but, you know, as we've already established, the captain of the Medusa was not the
not
greatest.
The brightest bulb in the bunch.
No, exactly. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Although it was nice to see what Marshall Teague really looks like. You know? I mean...
Yeah. How many different prosthetics have you worn on this series?
Yeah, all of them.
22! That's when I stopped counting. One of those gave me a rash, and I'm not sure which. yes.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe Marshall Teague didn't know what to do with himself. Now that it was, you know, just his regular face.
Oh, good point.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it was directed by Mike Vahar, and he always does great work. And I think there were some elements in there that were well directed. But again, I think it was more between the characters and not anything.
I think, honestly, the scenes between Peter Woodward and his dad, Edward Woodward, I'm pretty sure that all of those scenes, they just let the cameras roll and said, okay, have fun.
Yeah, right.
That's what some of those scenes felt like. And I would have loved to have seen outtakes of them doing their play-by-play commentary on the little demon attack.
Yeah.
Sounds so
fun. I don't know. What else do we have to say about this?
I think we've covered it.
Yeah, right. I think so too.
We didn't. I mean, this is actually one of those. This is a one act, one stage play because we didn't see Dr. Chambers, even though she was mentioned.
Right.
We didn't see Darina, not even mentioned. Didn't see Eilerson, not even mentioned. And we saw Matheson for what, 2.5 minutes?
Yeah, maybe that.
So yeah, this was definitely an off Broadway production.
Yeah, if you want to call it that. Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it adds to the techno mage thing, and a lot of people groove on that, and I don't think it, you know, it was okay.
And all we can do is speculate on what other tangent storylines this was supposed to set up, because that's what it really did feel like. A setup for maybe another character journey for Galen. Would you call this a shell game or a short con? What would you call it?
I'd say a short con.
Short con, okay.
Yeah.
So this was our Ocean's 11 episode?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. Although they weren't stealing anything. They were trying to put the kibosh.
Okay.
I'd say it was more like the Sting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, as always, if you have questions or commentary or anything we missed, feel free to call on the voicemail line. But right now, we're going to take a really quick break. And we have emails, right?
We do. We have some emails.
All right. We'll be back in a minute with some emails.
Have you ever wanted to set up your own website? How about post your insights, ideas, or creative works on the web for others to contemplate, comment, or enjoy? Sound intriguing? If so, then WordPress is the software for you. It's so easy to get started and create content. And best of all, it's free. Now, to help you get going, check out the book, Teach Yourself WordPress in 10 Minutes, and the companion podcast, Teach Yourself WordPress in 10 Minutes, in 10 Minutes, hosted by authors Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp. Whether you're brand new to WordPress or have been using it for years, you're sure to learn something from Chuck and Craig. In each 10-minute episode, the companion podcast covers tips, insights, latest developments, and useful WordPress information that just wouldn't fit in the book. Be more effective with WordPress.com and WordPress.org by listening to the podcast, Teach Yourself WordPress in 10 Minutes. In 10 minutes. Find it at ChuckChat.com or search for Teach Yourself WordPress in iTunes.
And we're back with a little more discussion on questions or commentary our fans have for us.
Are you ready for this? This is actually going to be the Natalie C. email segment here.
Okay.
This comes to us from Natalie in Missouri. She says, "Hi. I started listening to the B5 podcast in September 2010, and as I write this, I'm listening to episode 2003. Almost caught up, and yes, my ears are bleeding from listening to all of you for so long. Just hope I haven't caught up just in time for the show to end. How did I get into the B5 universe? Glad you asked. Babylon 5 was on when I was in middle school, but I don't think I started watching until it was on TNT. My dad recorded all the episodes on VHS, which we still have, and printed out all the episode guides, all of this which he sent to our friends in Oregon who are not getting all the episodes. My dad thought these would never be available again since it was before DVDs and before series box sets. I remember the commercials on TNT with Shakar ranting about his people. I've been saving my questions since I started listening, and since you have requested short emails several times, I will send additional emails with one question per email so you can spread them out. I got nothing. Natalie in Missouri." So, Natalie, first of all, yes, thank you for finding the Babcast. We do appreciate that, obviously.
Did she say 2003 or 203?
Episode 203. She started listening in September of this year. So she has porked down over 200 episodes of the Babylon podcast.
In 2 months.
In about 2 months. Yeah, three months maybe. Yeah.
You are a trooper, Natalie.
Yeah. Yes.
At this point, she's got to be hearing our voices in her sleep.
Yeah, and tossing and turning. You know, something that she mentions here, Mike and I were talking before, I think before you showed up, Summer, before the show started, Natalie talking about her dad recording everything on VHS and still having them, and we were talking about Walking Dead and how neither of us has really caught it, and our attitude was, we'll see if it's on demand. Yeah, we'll wait for the box set to come out. I mean, it's like a completely different mindset now.
Yep. Yeah. If you missed it, you can either watch all of them. Maybe AMC has it on their website. Maybe there'll be a marathon of it. Like they had a marathon of like all the first five episodes before they showed the season finale. You could, when the DVD comes out, you can either rent the DVD, buy the DVD, or stream it.
Yeah, right.
It's a brave new world.
Well, yeah, and with Netflix out there basically trying to kill the internet with all of their streaming services, I mean, you can pretty much get anything that you want on demand instantly anywhere. So it really has changed. It's changed everything about the way that we consume video content and television shows and movies and TV and everything else. And I'm not sure that that's going to change. I think it's just going to ramp up. And I'm terribly afraid for a lot of the shows that are out there that are still going on the old antiquated rating system, the ones that are getting canceled. I mean, because think about it back in the day when B5 was on. If B5 had all of these alternate ways of viewing it, and those numbers could have been basically included in the metric, where would B5 be today? Would it have turned into the next Star Trek franchise and had movies and series and spin-off shows and just as much? Because I we've said this time and time again on this show, is that probably the one thing that B5 suffered from more than anything else was its unavailability. I mean, yeah. That was one of the main reasons that I didn't really catch up and was not a super huge fan, is because it was so sporadic when the shows aired, where they aired, when they aired. I couldn't find them. I could have rented the DVD, got caught up with season one, and been able to find it on TV, that would have been a whole different animal. And I think it would have roped a lot more people in and made that a lot more widespread than what it was.
Well, I think B5 straddled it straddled the second age of television and the third age of television. Seriously, because P10 was in essence what Paramount tried to do with UPN, what CW has tried to be, and you know, some of those other lesser networks, before I think the infrastructure was there to support it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe infrastructure is not the right word, but the way the system was running, it was still syndication like Next Generation was on. Mm-hmm. Or any number of reruns. It wasn't about having these little tiny networks weren't there because the delivery system wasn't there. I mean, today, like, how many millions of channels do you have at your fingertips? Running all kinds of niche programming and what have you.
And not only that, but I mean that's the thing, is back then there was not nearly as much competition for sci-fi content as there is now. I mean,
if it had been syndicated in the way like a Next Generation had been, I think you're saying, Mike, I think more people would have found it because it wouldn't have been subject to the difficulties they had with P10. It would have been the local channel. They would have, they might have likely run it right after Next Generation. Okay,
here's our
sci-fi programming block. Okay, there you go. Done and done.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because that was the thing, that's what sucked about Star Trek. Well, not what sucked about it, but what gave it its big edge was that it was on in prime time. It was on in the sweet spots. It wasn't on at 1 a.m., on a Wednesday night, which was when B5 aired in my area.
Right.
I mean, it was late night binge, you know, drinking and, oh gosh, what's on TV? Oh, here's this B5 show. Okay, I guess I'll watch this.
Right. But I'm hammered, so I have no clue what's going on.
Yeah, and you're like, I have no idea what's going on. Okay, it looks like a really cool show, but I've missed too much. I don't care.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know, but I have to say, I'm beginning to have hope that Babylon 5 as a franchise might be where Star Trek was back in the mid-70s. There is a rabid following that's there, that's keeping it alive. We're getting, if not new content, at least new analysis of the content, thanks to our friends over at Synthetic Worlds with the B5 book stuff. And you look at it, how well that's selling.
Well, it's exactly what we were saying, though. It's exactly what we were saying, is that now B5 is available on those means. They're available in DVD box sets. They're available on demand. You can find the entire series. It's being re-released, and there's a whole new generation and a whole new fan base that's being built on this kind of undercurrent delivery system that, you know, friend of a friend said, this was a really cool thing. I need to watch this, yada, yada. And
here's the question though, that I have is these delivery systems. I think there's value to them, definitely. But the one drawback I see with them is, I think, Lost Tales is a perfect example. That was done on such a shoestring budget.
Oh yeah.
And the writing was compelling, and the character and the acting were phenomenal, but the epic scope of a Babylon 5 really suffered for it. Mm-hmm. So, and looking at like the episode we deep geeked on today, while from a science fictional point of view, you kind of like the idea of, yeah, there's a backward planet. They've rejected technology. They're living in a sort of a medieval society. That's all well and good, but you can't help but wonder, budgets are really tight. We're in a series where you have to make new planets every week. It's a whole lot easier to go to a backlog to get a medieval inn than it is mm-hmm. to create an alien space station.
Absolutely.
So given that, sure, if you can target your audience to say, you know what, there might be only 2 million science fiction fans, but we can reach every one of them through an internet release. That's really great, but it's still only 2 million people. Mm-hmm. How can you do something of an epic sweep of a Babylon 5?
I don't know. I disagree with that, because I think that Fringe, and I think that Chuck has some bite-sized moments in it, but it's becoming a very large story arc.
No, I'm not talking about the story, Mike. I'm talking about the production.
You think, there's some pretty heavy-duty ones out there right now. I mean, look at Stargate Atlantis. That's a pretty big endeavor, and it's doing very well. It's just got the Stargate name behind it. That's why it's doing so well.
But Stargate Universe has one group of sets. I mean, it's one of the reasons Babylon 5 could do what they could do in terms of budget was they set up their fixed sets and everything was there on the station for the most part.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
That's different than Star Trek. That's different than Crusade. To go and say we're visiting a different planet every week,
mm-hmm.
and we got to make them look different. And
I don't know. I look at the success of like Sanctuary, that's all done in CGI. And yes, yeah. There's times when you really can tell that it's all done in CGI, but that's being done on a shoestring budget. Warehouse 13, same deal. It's being done with a lot of CGI backdrop, a lot of CGI and green screen, and it's working very well. I think it could be done. It's a what we're talking about now is a matter of logistics and a matter of good, just a good forward thinking production team. I don't think the limitations are as big as you think there.
And I think one of the reasons that Warehouse 13 is so successful is that they play within their limits.
Yes, they do.
They don't overreach their means, and because of that you know, they focus on what's important, which is character and story. Mm-hmm. So okay, well,
we beat that one to death.
No, I know.
Sorry, well, maybe, I had to jump in there on that one.
That's something that's very
important right now, because this is something that I think everybody in Hollywood, I think everybody that's attached to any kind of production right now is looking at and asking the question, what do we do with all of this that's out there? What do we do with this DVR? What do we do with this on demand? What do we do with all these fans who are not watching the TV shows when we're putting the TV shows out, and they're not watching the commercials because they hate the commercials, and they're seeking alternate means so that they don't have to do it? It's the conversation we've been having over at Slice of Sci-Fi now for probably a year.
2 years.
You know, what do we do?
Yeah.
How is it that we keep losing these shows because they're still using this arcane model of you have to watch the show live so that we can force feed you commercials, and if you look at it someplace else, your vote does not count. That's not fair to the show. It's not fair to the fans. And I think that B5 is falling into the same category of it's not coming back, because they're looking at it going, well, the numbers weren't that great on the TV show, so it's not really going to make us any money if we put another TV show out.
Right.
The thing is, a lot of these shows that we like, somebody was tweeting on Sci-Fi saying, well, we don't run this because the ratings for the reruns aren't that good, and everybody already has the DVDs, nobody will watch it. And I tweeted in saying, when you guys show Firefly, I have the episodes on. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I have the DVD. It's something to watch, you know?
Right.
If there's
right.
a Burnt Notice marathon on, I'll turn it on. Yep. I may not pay attention to it all, but guess what? I'm on my computer. I can hear the episodes. I'm still enjoying what I'm hearing.
Oh, God. If I'm surfing, you know, channel surfing and Star Trek, the motion picture, I stumble across, I leave it there.
Wow.
And I've seen it 1,000,005 times.
This is an entire episode all to itself, kids. I tell you what. you really well, all it takes is to get one guest on that is a producer or somebody that's out there right now.
We need somebody who is actually either in charge of determining the programming or is part of the committee that determines the programming, because they really do not understand how people have changed how they watch TV.
Yeah.
Are holding on.
They may understand it, but they're ignoring it because they're still so set into this old model that they have not figured out a way.
I think it's going to be it's a generational thing. I think what's going to have to happen is, to be blunt and cold about it, the current generation of content producers, or let me rephrase that, the current generation of executives who underwrite the production of content are going to have to retire and die, and the next generation who have been raised going to Hulu, going to websites,
yeah,
going to podcasts, will then take over.
I think you're right.
And say, yep. Dude, hey, when I was a kid, we downloaded it. So, hey, since I know how this works, I know now how to monetize it.
Right.
It does not always work like that. A lot of the people who are coming up in the movie studios who have the power are the ones who go, oh, I remember the Goonies. Let's make that again.
Yeah.
Well, there's
that aspect too. But like I said, this is a show unto itself, guys. Yeah. Are you telling
us we've run out of time?
Run out of time. And this is a great conversation. And I think you're probably going to get a buttload of emails over it.
I would like to talk to somebody who is in charge of programming, because they don't understand how we watch TV anymore.
Right. Exactly. You know? Or at least that's what it sure looks like.
Because honestly, I don't care if Warner Brothers has made $10 billion off selling B5 DVDs. There are people out there who would still watch the show in reruns.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They've already have the example of Stargate SG-1 in reruns, Star Trek Next Generation in reruns. Those shows, people still watch the reruns of them.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you believe that people would watch Babylon 5 reruns?
Yep.
All right. Well, let's save this. Let's table the discussion, because I know I have an answer to that, but then we're going to go on for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. This, like I said, we've got to set up a show to do this. Yeah, maybe after the first of the year. You want to talk about your break and what's happening?
Yes. We are taking the Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, winter solstice.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Yes. Festival of Lights, Christmas rave, whatever you want to call it. We are taking
Scotch holiday, whatever. Yeah.
I don't have any scotch. What?
It's all on holiday.
Yes.
That's right.
We are taking the year off. We will probably be back, what is it, January 5th?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
That would be it.
Look for us again in 2011. Hopefully, I don't know. I'm still waiting on some feedback from Edmund and Gary to see if they have any holiday treats for us up their sleeves. And
look, we are very grateful for everyone who has found us, like Natalie, for people who have been with us from the beginning, like Edmund and Gary, people like Neil who've called in. A number of people called in for the first time this year. Call up again and get those voicemails in. Father Beast is one who comes to mind, who started giving us voicemails and had some really great points. And, you know, I mean, much as we do this because we love the show and everything, you know, it's great to know that people out there listening and get value from it, and that just, you know, encourages us to do more. So it's all your fault.
Don't encourage them, folks. They just do more.
Right, exactly.
What was it? Okay, for all of the shows that we have lost this year before their time, we have denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, and podcast.
Podcast. Yeah. And podcast. That's right.
And I think in a lot of cases, podcast replaces acceptance. Acceptance, acceptance comes after podcast.
Yeah.
Acceptance is podcasting.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Why are you doing talking about a show that's been off the air for 10 years?
Shut up. Pick that scab. Don't pick that scab.
Okay. You're done. Let's go.
We are beyond done.
We're out of here.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Everyone. We did that already.
You know how to get
just say
in touch
goodnight,
with us.
Summer.
Goodnight,
goodnight, Summer.
The number. Actually, the website, BabylonPodcast.com, Farpoint Media. Forums.com. Hey.
What?
You made me lose my place. Email address, BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. Phone number, 206-8-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year we ran out of time.
Time never ends. It's
the
on
the la 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 la
la.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere Koshmas. Koshmas. Merry Koshmas.
Merry Koshmas. There we go.
Zathras got run over by a reindeer.
Oh, you just started a meme that we will never dig out of now.